We live in very interesting times. We are more comfortable. There's more convenience, ease, opportunity, information than ever before in human history. And yet, so many people are feeling depressed, disconnected, unhappy, and even unsafe. And me and Patty are going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about AI and some of the effects it's having, both positive and negative, on people. We're going to talk about how we manage ourselves in a world that is becoming increasingly overstimulating, and how we have found a way to at least improve our states of inner peace, groundedness, joy, while also using some of these conveniences. We've never actually discussed this together. I've yet to actually hear Patty's like full-on take on this topic, and I don't know if she's heard mine, but there have been some requests, and we feel like it's a very relevant topic. So we welcome you to the podcast. I'm here with my lovely wife, Patty, here.
Hey.
So yeah, you know, I get asked about AI in particular all the time on the full-time purpose coaching calls. Mm-hmm. Because right now, you know, what that is the business where I teach people how to like grow an online business, essentially. I'm like a business coach for people who want to do kind of what I do, who want to have like a social media type of audience, and then a service, whether it's coaching or healing or running retreats or selling courses. And I've done that and do it, and I teach people how to do it. And I get all the time asked, like, Vic, what do you think of AI? Because AI is becoming so present in the online space. You see it everywhere. There's even like multiple, like thousands, fake accounts that look like real people, but is completely like AI generated.
That's so crazy to me.
Crazy. And AI, you know, as a business owner online, it's like it can make a lot of things very easy. And there are a lot of ways I personally use it. And I can tell you with honesty, it can be a very slippery slope. It can help you, but it's not you. It doesn't quite have the ability to think organically and come up with like truly innovative ideas. And it's very easy to kind of lose connection with the reason people want to do this in the first place, you know, to express their creativity. Mm-hmm. It can make it so easy where you almost don't have to. So anyways, I get asked this all the time, and I found that some of the students are like anti-AI. They don't want to hear anything about it. I can tell you kind of are over there, Patty. We'll hear your take in a second. Mm-hmm. And there are other people who do it so much, and they see like it's like they're like almost abusing it, and it's also causing harm. And my answer always is it's an evolving thing. For me, it's a tool I will experiment with, and I will find uses for, but I see there is like a shadow side, and it's very easy to kind of give away your power. At the same time, it's almost silly to not use it at times. So what comes to mind is the other day we were going to my son's football game, and my older son, Lucas, 12, he was almost bragging to me how he was learning how to, he pitched to me this math problem. He said, "Hey Dad, what do you think 35 over, what was it? It was like,
I don't even know. I wasn't literally.
What do you think 35 over 76 is in terms of a decimal point?" He's like, "I know how to do it. You got to take 36 and you got to make it 3,600. And then he gave me this long spiel. And I said, "Hey, here's another idea, Luke. Why don't you just divide 35 by that bottom number and see what happens?" He's like, "No, that won't work. We were taught the real way." So even in school, he was taught this like really lengthy, roundabout, archaic way of doing something that could be done instantaneously on a calculator. And I kind of showed him that, and we kind of made a joke about it. But that's kind of that's almost like, in my opinion, to resist AI completely, it's almost like you're insisting on doing long division unnecessarily. There are some like very simple things it can speed up so much to where, in my experience, it gives me more time to do the things that matter, to film more videos, to film more, to record more podcasts, to do a lot of that creative work. I can do more good in the world with using this, but it can very easily be overused. It can very easily become a crutch. And it can also be abused in other ways, which I don't want to get too far ahead here. Maybe you have some words to speak into this, babe.
Well, as you know, I was not anti-AI. I guess maybe I was in the beginning when it first kind of like became a thing. And I was like, I don't want to use it. It freaks me out. It's an intelligence that's constantly learning from what you're asking it. And it has access to information in such a quick way that, like, you know, we can't compete with that, right? And so it freaked me out a little bit because it is an intelligence that's programmed to learn. And, you know, and then, of course, my brain goes to like, well, AI will take over the world, right? But then I was talking to Aaron about AI, and he's like, you know that, like, when you use, like, maps, there's an AI to that. And so then I realized, like, I'm already using AI and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
But now I see it as a tool, you know, and it's a tool that you don't want to abuse, right? You don't want to, like, overuse the tool. I don't, anyway. I don't want to overuse it. So I use, like, GPT?
GPT. Okay, I was saying GBT for the longest
time. I still say ChatGBT, but I know it's ChatGPT, which is why I asked, but yeah. I still say it wrong. But anyway, and I've used it, but I use it like, I've used it maybe like 8 times in the last like year. And I only use it for things that I can't find anything look up that, you know, like if I'm looking up stuff and I can't find anything. Then I'll like ask, but I did use it the other day, like for a shortcut to thinking, like, oh, I'll just ask ChatGPT, you know? And then I was like, okay, you don't want to like get too into that. But I'm always like, thank you so much. You're the best, you know? And I'm always very polite and grateful because I want them to be like, hey, you are cool, right?
Yeah.
But I do see it as a tool, and I think that it can really benefit us if we use it in a good way. And like, I know people that like they're like kind of friends with ChatGPT, and they're like talking spiritual stuff with ChatGPT, and like you know, having very like high conscious conversations with the AI. You know,
interesting. Yeah,
and you know, there's a lot of really like cool insight that AI can have, you know, on different things. And, you know, so I think it's an interesting tool, but I do feel like it can, you know, like for example, like college students using ChatGPT to like write their essays and their papers and do their homework. And, you know, it's like there is something that happens to your brain when you actually learn something. And I think that the downfall of overuse with the AI can lead to lower cognition.
And it does. And it has been proven to.
Right. So, okay, there we go. And so.
Not so much with AI, but just like, just the internet in general.
Electronics in general. Like, yeah. And I can see that. And like, you know, it concerns me a little bit about like what will our grandkids, you know, how will their cognition be? What will their ability to like problem solve be? You know, like because it's there's so much a shortcut to thinking. And I think that there's something really powerful and beautiful in the process of thinking.
You know?
So because I don't really use AI that much, I don't really have like a whole lot of like insight, but what I can say is whenever I've used AI, I'm always just blown away at the intelligence that it has, you know, because it just, you know, it really gives you some interesting information.
Yeah. Yeah. So just to say, I kind of, my first impression was that of like, uh-oh, like fear.
Right.
I remember I was at Aaron's house one day and he busted out this, he showed me a YouTube video about this. It never really took off, actually. That mask, you ever seen that Apple mask that people wear that basically can kind of like project essentially like a computer screen? Remember, he brought it over one time, actually. The kids were watching it.
Yeah.
What is it called? Apple Vision or something like that. And it was bananas. Yes. It still is. Even that was a couple years ago, and it's still pretty crazy what it can do. Apple Vision, I think, is what it was. And I remember he showed me the video like that was promoting it, and I thought, oh, this is not good. And that was like my initial fear. And what I sensed was like uncertainty, power in the hands of humanity who might not be mature enough to kind of use it. And what could that potentially lead to? And, you know, that kind of thing. That was my initial impression. So I understand how you feel that way. And yet it's here nonetheless. So it's almost like something we have to come to terms with. And I see it as potentially a very useful tool of transformation, as it seems to be almost like it is the closest physicalized representation of the mind and how the mind is. The mind is also a tool. The mind is also powerful. The mind can also work for us and help us learn how to become a doctor, for example. It can also work against us in very, very profound ways and almost like ruin, you know, most humanity might be, you know, said to be like almost imprisoned by their mind. So it's this interesting thing that I almost see it as a good sign, because it tells me that we are becoming more conscious of our minds. And this to me seems like a reflection of it. And I think what we're going to see is a lot of different ways people use it. Some will resist it and probably, you know, maybe fall behind a little bit in life if you completely like ignore the technology and refuse to use it. It's just everybody else will be doing things much faster, much more easily. And then there'll be people who completely abuse it and maybe, be, you know, where their best friend is ChatGPT and they stop going out. You know, you're going to see, I think, all sorts of different like scenarios. The cool thing is it's like no one's forcing it on us. It's up to the individual to use it to whatever degree they prefer. And I think it requires a great deal of self-awareness and self-honesty to use it in a way that's genuinely for your highest purpose. And it's not easy because, like, I've experimented in my business where, for example, what happened? Like, when I started writing my book, basically, at first it was like, it was so helpful because there'd be an instance, for example, where I would want to, like, quote from Carl Jung or something.
Right.
And I could go look through all my books
and
try to find a specific quote. Or I could say, give me 10 quotes by Carl Jung that would best be used in this particular, you know, paragraph, and bop, 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 and I choose one. Like that saved me days of doing kind of like very like grunt work, almost like unnecessary grunt work. But what I also started to find is, you know what? I can have ChatGPT like edit my entire thing, and it would do it instantly, pretty much instantly, and it would be amazing. And then I found that I started getting kind of lazy. Like I'd be trying to like form a sentence to express something. And I'd say, and I wouldn't be able to do it right away. So I'd be like, hey, how could I best say this? And it would say it perfectly. And then I started to use that. And then my writing started to feel a lot less like me, a lot more like AI. And it was a very, very sort of like slippery slope where I found that I was producing chapters faster than before that were way better than I could ever manually do, but it was still not me, for one. It wasn't really authentic, and it lacked the energy. I found that when I would read it, like on paper, it was way better again, but it didn't move me. It didn't really inspire me. It didn't have any emotional effect whatsoever. It was almost like too perfect. But it's like, it's very tempting when you're struggling with like writer's block and you can't form the sentence, just to like, chat can give me the perfect sentence, then I can move on. Then you do it once, fine, but then it's like this slippery slope. So I think that, I don't know. I think it's like one of those cool things that everybody can use in their own way. And we're all going to find, you know, I think it's on us to, I suppose, to really be honest and figure it out. Is this working for me? Am I becoming lazy? And finding kind of a balanced relationship. And I don't think it's going to be some black and white formula like, well, this is when I use it, this is when I don't use it, because it's always changing. It's always evolving. It's seeping into more and more parts of our daily life. And we are always changing. We are always evolving. And I think it's a lot, there's a lot of gray area here. So I find myself kind of intrigued by it. I use it. It helps me. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what like humanity, I suppose, does with it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and I don't think it's all, I don't think it's bad, right? I definitely think it can be a good thing, you know, but I also can see how, you know, it can prevent our evolution in a good conscious way, you know, like the human evolution.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like what humanity needs right now is to like tune out of everything, not just ChatGPT, but like the screens, and find out like what's really going on mm-hmm. the inside. But yeah. It's so entertaining. It's so accessible in information, entertainment, that, and it's so addictive. It's literally made to be addictive. So mm-hmm. it's not that we're weak-willed. It's very, takes a great deal of willpower and self-discipline to resist the pull and sort of seductive quality to even like the smartphone and browsing the web or going on social media. It's so compelling that humans only have so much like discipline and like restraint is a kind of a finite resource that we run out of. Mm-hmm. And it just takes so much of it to resist it. But to not try, you get sucked into it, and you waste a lot of your life away, unfortunately.
Yeah, something that came in is, you know, I've been listening to a lot of different music for things, and I came across this. It's Muji, and it's like him speaking, and then there's like music in the background, like a Muji chill step sort of vibe, right? And one of the things that he says in it is something along the lines of like, we, like the goal is to be living from the inside out instead of from the outside in, right? And I think AI and social media and just the internet in general, it promotes living from the outside in instead of from the inside out. And I think that's where a lot of depression, anxiety, you know, deep confusion, you know, because we don't really, we're like losing the sense of self. We're losing like who we are, and we're like seeking out who are we? Who do we want to be? Well, I want to be like that person that's on, you got 5 million followers, and I want to do this because that's what I'm seeing and they look so happy, right? But what we don't see is what's not being posted. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole life that happens outside of what's being posted. And we sometimes view what's being posted as what's reality, especially like the younger generation, right? Like the younger kids, because they're a little more like influential or influenced. I guess that would be the better word. But it's I think, you know, the goal is for us to really like get in tune with ourselves and find out like, what is my true authenticity? What do I really want? Who am I today? Who do I get to be? Who do I want to be in the future? And I think that because there's so much in our face, so much out there, like, you know, it becomes that line of what's authentic for me and what do I see becomes blurry.
Very much. Yeah. And you know, the thing I want to say is it didn't really start. I don't think this is like more of a, what we're seeing now is more of an intense example of what's been going on for a very long time. It started with television, you know, mm-hmm. television mm-hmm. became, had kind of a similar effect. Even I'll read about like, like philosophers like Socrates and the Stoics, and they would even talk about like getting lost in books, doing too much reading as being kind of a bad thing. But I remember Jim Morrison had this really badass, like he was doing an interview and he had this really poetic way of putting it. He said, there's something sad about millions of people sitting down after work in front of a television, in front of a screen, watching a second or third hand sort of iteration of reality when reality's happening right outside their door, right in their neighborhoods. And it's, he said it, the way he put it was like so right. He said it creates kind of like a somnambulized walking, a waking sleep.
Yeah.
And I you see that even more pronounced with the devices, with like just what we have, what we're talking about now. It's more obvious how, he saw it as kind of a tool of control and things like that. Well, who knows if there's malicious intent behind all, but I think it's just, we're humans and we create stuff and we advance stuff and it's sort of come to
and
this.
And I think as humans, it's natural to want to titillate the senses, right? And what do you watch a good movie and man, you can just feel all the feels watching that movie. And you just feel like you experienced something that you didn't actually experience, but you watched it and you felt some things.
And that's where I think that where it can be very damaging, because with there's no effort involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment has become a passive thing, not like something you create, you know, with your imagination, mm-hmm. for example, or with friends, you know, sitting around a fire telling stories. That's entertainment. But there's something very soulful and pleasant about that requires social skills. It requires, you know, being around other people. It requires all these different things that you can sort of have that surface level effect without any effort. And I think that leads to like something, people think that there's something missing, mm-hmm. because there is.
Yeah. But just to say, I do love to watch a good show, right?
Like, yeah, I'm not above it. Like, we watch shows.
I mean, I do. I get it. I do enjoy it. And I see the beauty of that, and also like, you know, for every truth there is another truth.
Yeah.
You know?
And I see that. I'm not above it. We watch TV, but I also feel like it's almost like ice cream and candy for the senses. How do we feel? Like me and Patty will sometimes get sucked into like a drama, like a show. We are watching what? Like Animal Kingdom. Like,
oh my God.
Pretty cool show, but very like heavy and intense. But we were like sucked into it. And what started out was like, we'll just watch it on the weekends, you know, we'll just watch it.
Okay.
And then it turned into like after lunch around like 2 or 3 o'clock, we'd watch one episode. And then after a while, we'd hope the kids go out and play so we can watch another episode.
Or like at least like 10 minutes of it, right? Like it's like, we'll take what we can get.
But I found that I felt worse.
Yeah.
I felt more depressed. I feel usually very depleted after.
Mm-hmm.
So we try not to watch like TV until a little bit at the end of the night, because it I think it released a lot of dopamine as well. And instead of going out there and playing basketball with the kids or working or writing or reading, I'm just like sort of spent afterwards. And I feel kind of just like restless and discontent and depleted.
And also just you want more. Like I notice on the days where if I'm like scrolling a lot on Instagram, I will like be like, all right, I'm going to put my phone down and I'm just going to sit and be. And then I notice like I can only sit for like a few minutes before I like am reaching for my phone again to be like, oh, did somebody text me or did I get an email or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like if I don't do that, if I don't like scroll, then I can check my email and then sit for a long time.
Yeah.
But in order for me to like, if I'm scrolling a lot, in order for me to be able to actually sit and have some quiet time, we'll say, or just some like nature time, I have to have my phone inside the house if I'm outside. Otherwise, I find myself like being on it more.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so the more you, you know, the more you do, the more you want to do.
100%.
At least me, for me. I won't speak for everyone, but that's, and I can feel it sucking me in. Like I can tell when I'm scrolling too much, but then it's like, I just kind of say, well, fuck it. I don't have anything else to do, you know? So it's like, yeah, not, it's, I can see it for myself. I can tell, like, I'm a much happier, less agitated human being if I'm not on my phone a lot or not watching TV.
That's why I have, like, you see, I have pretty strict, not always consistent, but I attempt to have strict boundaries where you see me, I lock my phone up at night.
I know, and I can't, it drives me nuts when you not lock your phone up, because sometimes you lock it up for, like, an entire day, but it's like 4 p.m. and I'm like, what if I have to leave? You're not gonna have your phone in the morning, you know?
That's the difficulty. It's become so integrated in our life. In fact, at one point, I've had two different dumb phones.
Yeah.
One of them was this, God, I don't remember the name of it, but it was so dumb, you could say. It was so, like texting people, I would have to like, remember
like how you'd have texting. To like- old school texting, it's like, you have like a B and you go 2-2.
Yes. Yeah. So that was just, you know, Aaron sent me a voice note and I'd be like, instead of like this fragmented sentence responses that took 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, this is just not going to work. And then I got another one, a Wyze phone, which is actually pretty cool. It's fairly modern. It allows you to have like music and GPS, but no internet, no social media, no apps. But then like the voice notes weren't going through, and I have to conduct business, and I send voice notes, and it just became unpractical and too much work. And so I suppose I could have forced it and maybe been better off, but I'm not there yet.
It's so funny to me because it's like, you know, we were born in the 80s. In the 80s, cell phones weren't even like really a thing.
No.
You know, and so
barely
like
in the 90s.
Right. And so it was like, you know, I grew up having one of those rotary phones, you know, where it's like one and then you got to like pull it around. Like people probably don't even
like
know what that is.
My grandmother had one.
Yes, exactly. And it was like, that was just what you did. It's like, it just shows like how, so we can just adapt to whatever's in front of us quickly too, you know?
Yeah.
Like one of the things I don't do, like I like to write things down. Like if I'm doing something, if I'm like creating a program or something, I don't use my laptop. I write it down like old school. And it takes me so much longer, but I just prefer that way. For myself, I don't know why I do. Maybe I don't know, but I know I would be much faster if I just typed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but for that you'd have to go onto your screen, and then it's like hit and miss. Do you get sucked in or not?
Yeah, but I don't have any. The thing with my computer is I don't have any social media on there, and I don't know my password.
Okay, that's good.
So it's good. It's just like all on my phone, but we can, you know, I think that it's just evolved, and it's sort of like, what did people do in the 80s when they had business? They just had to either meet in person or have a phone call, you know, because there were no video calls.
Yeah, but now there is. That's the challenge.
I know.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I do like to see people when I'm like talking, like if I'm doing a session or if I'm like, you know, haven't talked to someone in a while, and I like to, you know, have a Zoom and see them. And, you know, so I think that there is some really beautiful aspects, you know, and the other thing too is with all of this technology, you know, Maya, our daughter, she had, 3 of her closest friends move within a year out of state. And she still talks to them and FaceTimes them regularly.
Yeah.
And I moved 30 minutes away from my friends when I was in sixth grade. And it was like, you might as well have moved, you know, across the country. I was sending letters. Like, I actually sent letters to my friend, you know?
Yeah.
And so there is, I think, a lot of really cool aspects to technology and like all of these things.
Of course. I think there's good and bad to anything. And to take like a truly polarized stance to me seems like you got to really be in denial of the benefits or the dangers,
mm-hmm.
you know. But what I see even the dangers, even like the shadow side, I see that as having potential to be helpful. And the example that comes to mind is one of the things I'm going to do this week. In fact, if it's nice enough, I'm going to start camping out in my backyard once a week because I work on the computer and there's a part of me that literally craves like undisturbed space, like nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this, a lot of people are kind of rebelling. They're kind of like going off and living the van life. And
yeah.
I think like the shadow side, I think, will even in the end at least offer opportunity for people to reconnect.
Like, yeah.
It's like there's always a counter. There's like, you need pressure sometimes. Maybe humanity needs this. Maybe like we didn't get the message from the TV.
Yeah.
And now we have this. And now it's like, now the studies are even backing up like the dangers of this and how people are, I think, are waking up to how this is not like, they're waking up to the imbalance within themselves, within the world, within life itself. And I think it's resulting in people like being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like, because I have to work on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to kind of almost accept a certain amount of like that type of agitation in my life, but I don't like it. And what I'm going to do is go into a tent. You know, mm-hmm. I meditate. I go to martial arts. I do things as a result of this that I maybe wouldn't have done if not pressed. If I was too comfortable and too like things were too good, I don't know if I would be as inspired to like really dive into myself through meditation,
right.
And think that and going in the tent and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you know this, I don't even know who said it or where it came from, but if it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's where, I mean, I feel like the real challenges in life is where the growth happens. You know, if everything's always good, then there's really no opportunity for growth.
Yeah. And I think the people who are going to really like crush it in this new age are the ones that learn how to work with it,
mm-hmm.
and benefit from it. Like there are, if you just ignore the speed at which you can do certain tasks, I'm not saying it's wrong, because some people might just prefer a very simple lifestyle. Depending on your goals, I would say it's like you might be missing out on certain things. But if you let it run, the show, then you're going to be harmed in another way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like where we're at now is adjusting and trying to find a like healthy balance to what's available to us. And I think we will. Human beings are very adaptable creatures, and we go astray and we fall and we do crazy things. But there's also, there's like a positive side to us too. We can evolve, we can change, we can, you know, what comes to mind is this book I read a long time ago, Man's Search for Meaning. It's about this psychologist who lived in Auschwitz, the Nazi death camp.
Mm.
And he eventually made it out, but he got to the point where his whole family was gone. And he was literally like on the brink of just, you know, dying due to the malnutrition and harsh environment. And around that time, he like something in his mind shifted. And he was able to find incredible peace. His consciousness literally shifted due to the harsh environment. And he realized that he was able to be in almost a state of like bliss, like genuine acceptance and happiness and bliss, even in that circumstance. And I think that kind of what we're seeing now is like a lot of pressure, a lot of challenges. And I think I believe, honestly, and I feel that we're going to start seeing people pop in that similar way and evolve. That's my hope.
I hope so.
And I think so. It's not like this far off thing. It's something that we've seen many, many examples of people flowering in the face of adversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, everything happens for a reason, you know, and maybe that reason for AI and social media is for us to give us opportunity to kind of wake up to what's in right in front of us, right? The reality of nature and the earth. And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of us forget is that the earth is here. We're living on it. And it's I believe it's a conscious being. And it's really magnificent. If you take a moment to like, just, I mean, we're sitting out in our backyard here and there's birds and it's just sunny and, you know, just appreciating that moment. And with all the stimuli, it's hard to remember to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's the awakening. That's the potential is, you know, we've had people throughout history that could sit in a backyard and be basically blissed out because of just how aware they are of the life, the fascinating manifestation of the dynamic force of life just manifesting and renewing itself in each moment before them. There's like an awe to just the very simple, mundane aspects of life. And I think because we're becoming so severed from that, mm-hmm. it can sort of inspire people to like maybe rekindle that.
Yeah,
that's how I feel. I feel I've been reading a lot of William Blake and reading about people who like live like that. And like, I'm determined to become like that somehow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll do it in this lifetime, but I'm going to at least try. I'm going to do what they did and really try to just be in the moment. And yeah, so I think it's like we're seeing like an acceleration of multiple paths. There will be probably a lot of people who don't do that and mm-hmm. literally just keep manifesting problem after problem as a result of this imbalance. And I think there are other people learning from it and evolving from it. And it's our choice, I suppose,
yeah.
to what we choose to do with the situation. It's here.
Yeah.
So anyways, anything you want to add? I feel like it's a good place to wrap it up.
I feel complete.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening, my friends. We wish you an amazing week and we'll catch you next time. Peace.